92.5 FM, 1340 AM, and on Alexa, say play WMUN, a Whoop Boom station. This is the new WMUN Muncie.
On WMUN 92.5 FM and 1340 AM, as well as WHBU 101.1 FM and 1240 AM, and streaming live on television on Fox 59's website. Replays also available. We are going to now take you down to the stage where, standing by at the podium, is Director of News Operations and Morning News Anchor for Wolf Boom Radio, Steve Lindell.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Indiana Congressional District 5 Forum, sponsored by the Leagues of Women Voters of Muncie, Delaware County, Anderson-Madison County, Hamilton County, and Howard County, in partnership with Wolf Boom Radio, WMUN Muncie, and Oldies 101 WHBU in Anderson, and Fox 59 and CBS 4. I'm your moderator for tonight, Steve Lindell, Vice President and President of Programming, Director of News Operations for the radio group. To thank all the volunteers as well as the Anderson Community Schools for allowing us to hold the forum here tonight. Our format for the evening will be as follows. The volunteers from the leagues will be looking for you and your questions. A lot of them have been submitted already, and that's fantastic. The questions that you want answered will be answered by all of the candidates that are on the stage right now. The questions will be reviewed by members of the League of Women Voters before being passed to me to read. Questions will be reviewed for clarity of language and handwriting, repetition from previously asked questions tonight, and inappropriate topic or language. The content and the intent of the questions will not be modified, as is the point of tonight, for you to learn what you wish to learn about the candidates. In a moment, I will briefly introduce each of the candidates with scripts provided by them. After that, each will make a two-minute opening statement, then we'll begin asking questions. All candidates will have 1 minute to answer each question, rotating in responding. Timekeepers will indicate when there is time running out. Candidates, please pay attention to the center first row. That time mark for you will come from that member of the league right there. Ladies and gentlemen, photographs may not be taken during the forum except by the media. At the end of the night, each candidate will have a one-minute closing statement, and after that, I will wrap with a brief closing statement of my own. We ask that you please hold your reactions during the forum, except for now, as we greet the candidates in alphabetical order. The first candidate is Raju Chinthala. Born in India, credits his grandmother's focus on education for his achievements. With dual master's degrees in speech and hearing and business, he has enjoyed a 30-year career as a speech-language pathologist and businessman in the U.S. He arrived in 1994 and became a citizen in 2010. Raju has excelled in healthcare and business, serving Indiana's 5th Congressional District while fostering partnerships and investments for Hoosiers. His Republican Party involvement since 2003 reflects his commitment to the Constitution, public service, and supporting veterans. Raju's dedication has earned him prestigious awards, including the Sagamore of the Wabash and the Presidential Lifetime Achievement Award. Next candidate is Max Engling, a devoted public servant and congressional candidate who champions conservative principles, fiscal responsibility, limited government, family values, and the rule of law. As a Christian and family-oriented Hoosier, he's committed to reducing government intrusion, fostering prosperity for Indiana families, and bringing sanity back to Washington. With over a decade of experience in conservative politics, he's dedicated to defending the sanctity of life, securing our borders, and curbing reckless spending. Max Engling embodies faith, family, and a brighter future for Indiana and the United States. Next is Chuck Goodrich, born in Roanne, Indiana, graduated from Purdue University, and has built a career at Gaylor Electric, an Indiana-based company, for the last 28 years. Goodrich began as an intern and worked his way up through the organization and eventually bought the company in 2014. Gaylor Electric now has 8 Indiana offices, Chuck has been married to wife Tricia Goodrich for 30 years. They have four grown children and recently became grandparents. Chuck makes his home in Noblesville, Indiana, where he is state representative for District 29. Next candidate, Mark Hurt, a graduate of Madison Grant High School, Taylor University, Baylor University, and Michigan State University. For the last 25 years, Mark has operated two private law offices in Kokomo and Noblesville and served as part-time deputy prosecuting attorney for the state of Indiana. In Washington, D.C., Mark served U.S. Senator Dan Coats as a professional staff person and U.S. Congressman Fred Grandy as a legislative assistant director. At the state level, Mark served Michigan Governor John Engler as a health care policy advisor. Mark currently resides in Kokomo with his wife Nancy and granddaughter Maria. Next candidate is Patrick Malader. Born and raised in downtown Gary, Indiana, after high school, attended Indiana University, receiving an accounting degree with distinction. Professionally, Patrick was a tax partner with Big Four CPA firm KMPG, and later a senior partner and national partner in charge of taxation and accounting firm BKD, now known as Forvis. Patrick is married to his high school sweetheart, Ellen. They have five children and three grandchildren. Patrick is concerned about how the tough economy and national debt is hurting Hoosiers of all ages and believes this can only be fixed by term-limiting Congress. The next candidate chair is open. We believe that Matthew will be joining us. Am I still correct in assuming that, League of Women Voters? Matthew will be joining us? Okay, very good. Matthew Pfeiffer was thinking he was unable to attend tonight because of a work emergency. We just received word before we started tonight. He is en route and will join us in just a moment. Matthew Pfeiffer, aged out of foster care at 18 years old and has been pushing policies ever since. After losing his sister to suicide at 19, Matthew has become passionate about being the voice of others. Matthew has received congressional awards and national awards for the work he has done, helping others across the United States, as featured in USA Today. Being a kidney donor in November of 22, Matthew has seen firsthand the challenges that face living donors. Matthew is currently a police officer and has worked closely with immigration visas. He will work for Hoosiers all across the 5th District to ensure their voice is heard. Next candidate is Ryan Feninger, a technology entrepreneur who has spent his career building companies and creating high-paying jobs. A lifelong Hoosier, Ryan graduated from North Central High School and Indiana University, where he started and sold his first tech company from his dorm room. Ryan is a Democrat running for Congress because Hoosiers deserve to be represented by someone who wants to dig in and solve problems, not become a career politician. If companies run on collaboration and innovation, our country can do it too. He lives in Carmel with his wife Christina, son Jack, daughter Kate, and their four pets. Next candidate is Deborah A. Pickett. Has called Indiana home for over 39 years, where she and her husband Neil have raised their three adult children. Originally from New York State and a military family, Ms. Pickett is a former United States Army reservist and served as a behavioral science specialist and then as an intelligence analyst. Ms. Pickett worked at the Hudson Institute as a researcher on their international trade and economic studies. But key to understanding the issues near and dear to the heart of Hoosiers is her advocacy and board leaderships on behalf of children, seniors, and neighborhood community. Next candidate, Lonnie D. Powell, a lifelong Hoosier and Navy veteran holds a bachelor's degree in business from Huntington University, an MBA from Indiana Wesleyan University, and a master's in ministry from Bethel College. With over 20 years in technology sales and operations leadership, LD is also a certified flight instructor, passionate about helping others achieve their aviation goals. His civic contributions include founding roles at the Chapel in Fort Wayne, leadership in Celebrate Recovery, and serving on the board of the Allen County Juvenile Center. Powell's resilience and transformative journey of over 18 years of personal recovery reflect his ability to inspire and overcome challenges. Our next candidate is Larry L. Savage, Jr. He's 50 years old and has been married to his wonderful wife for 25 years. They have three fantastic boys and a beautiful daughter-in-law. He is here to fight for the poor and middle class. He will represent this district with all his heart and fight to keep America safe and free. And our final candidate tonight, Victoria Spartz. Immigrated to Noblesville 24 years ago after meeting her husband, a born and raised Hoosier, on a train in Europe. Her first job was a bank teller, which led her to becoming a Big Four CPA and starting a real estate and farming business. Victoria served an Indiana State Senator role and is in her second term in Congress. She is an adamant fighter for constitutional rights, fiscal oversight, health care, border security, and hardworking Hoosiers against the corrupt establishment. Starting with nothing, Victoria has an enormous appreciation for the constitutional republic. Victoria is a mother of two girls. Ladies and gentlemen, would you please welcome our candidates to the stage? And now opening statements for 2 minutes for each of the candidates as we move across the stage. Mr. Chinthala.
Good evening. My name is Raju Chinthala, running for Congress. Raju is for you. I came to this country with two bags, immigrant, legal immigrant, to work in the state of Indiana as a speech language pathologist. I bring a wide variety of unique experience from healthcare as a speech pathologist, hotel owner and businessman, and worked for the government at Indiana Economic Development Corporation, bought billions of dollars and also the hundreds of thousands of jobs into the state of Indiana. That a unique experience, not many candidates, not many congressmen has that. When I came to this country, I lived American dream. I wanted to run for U.S. Congress because last 28 years, I've been here listening to same rhetoric that goes on in Washington, D.C. I've been with the people, I have a passion, I have experience. I want to protect the American dream, defend the Constitution, support small businesses. Thank you.
Good evening. Thank you, Steve. I appreciate it. And thank you to the League for putting this on. So my name is Max Engling. I'm running here in the 5th Congressional District. And I am a Christian. I am a husband. My wife, Kelsey, is out here. I'm a father. We have 4 kids, Livia, Miles, Audra, and Hallie. They're here as well. And I'm a conservative. And I'm not a career politician. But I do have 14 years of public service, both here in Indiana and out in Washington, D.C. And what drives me is faith, family, and hard work. On the faith side, I mentioned that I'm a Christian, and I grew up in a Christian household, and I appreciated that instillation of values, but that's only as good as if you take that for yourself. And so we took that and we said, we're going to raise our kids in this way as well. And then when you look out and you see, our country is falling away from the Judeo-Christian values that it was built on, and we need to turn back to those values. Then you look at family. So I mentioned that I have 4 children. I'm also the second oldest of 8 kids. So that puts a lot of responsibility on you quickly. And I look at what's the next generation going to be like? What will our country be like when we move into the future? And a lot of times people want to say, oh, but that's into the future. But really, it's not even into the future now. It's now and going forward because things have gotten so bad in our country. Then you look at hard work. So I started working probably before I should have. It was around 13 or 14. I was baling hay, I was detasseling corn, and worked construction all the way through college where I went at IUPUI. I also worked through my master's degree at the Naval War College where I got a degree in national security and strategic planning. But I was on conservative campaigns that whole time, and it took me out to DC where I said, I want to continue serving on the conservative side. And I had the awesome opportunity to work in Washington training members of Congress on how to do this particular job. So we are prepared to get to work on day one. I'm tired of folks that are just willing to talk and lose. Let's get to work.
Once again, folks, if you could please hold your reactions at this point of the forum. Thank you.
Thank you very much for being here. My name is Chuck Goodrich, and I'm very honored and humbled to be with you tonight, and thank you for coming. I was born and raised in Rowan, Indiana, about 75 miles north of here, and that's where my parents taught me the conservative values of loving God, loving one another. Your word is your absolute bond and 100% of the truth. And the biggest thing was is that we live in the greatest nation ever known to the human race. And that's my foundation. That's how I make decisions. That's where I get my solutions from. So I bring solutions to problems. I don't bring my grievances or be a show horse. I'm actually a workhorse. I can tell you that I also look my whole life to build people up and to provide opportunity for folks and not play identity politics. But most of all, I never expect anything for anybody that I'm not willing to do myself. And I can tell you, as being president and CEO of Gaylor Electric, I have learned to put people first. We live in the greatest nation ever known to the human race. I am personally a product of the American dream. Like you heard earlier, I've been married for 30 years, have a beautiful wife, have four kids that I've raised, and I'm also now humbled to be known as Pop Pop, and my wife is Mimi, as my new grandchild, Fletcher. And I can tell you, when I look at him, I go to Washington, D.C. to fight for the American dream. So thank you for being here.
Those years with Senator Coates, Congressman Grandy, Governor Engler, they taught me a lot about how to fight, when to fight, and when you go into battle, you need a plan of action. I want to bring that to this district. I'm one of only two that was born and raised here in the district. I'm conservative, I'm a Christian, I'm pro-life, and I really believe you protect life when it begins all the way to when the heart stops beating. I'm a big defender of Israel. I believe that we need to stand up for Israel against threats of annihilation by Iran, who doesn't think it has a right to exist, or the Hamas terrorist group that took hostages, crossed the border and moved them to a foreign land, and then these Houthi rebels that are knocking out supply chains, our ships. I'm an NRA member, but I'm passionate about mental health care. I prosecuted for about 25 years and have a private law practice. And what I saw is over a third of the people I'm prosecuting had a mental health issue. Sometimes they would cover that with marijuana, drugs, alcohol. It was a deeper issue, many times caused by childhood trauma. So we need more psychiatrists. We need more hospital beds. We need more counselors. We need more systems of care, more crisis intervention training for officers in rural areas. That's needed. What we're doing is not good, and I'll tell you, it's an equal opportunity employer. It doesn't matter your age, your income, your experience, your status, it gets you. A couple other things. Border's number one issue. Over 75,000 deaths from fentanyl. We got to seal the border, bring safety to our country. Communist Chinese that come in, they know they're here. We've got Russian nationals coming in without background checks. After we seal the border, then we talk immigration reform. Lastly, budget deficit, $34 trillion, mortgaging our children's future. It's a moral issue. I have some ideas on zero-based budgeting, and as the marketplace of ideas goes forward in the debate, I'd like to talk about that.
Next candidate, please.
Good evening. A little over 20 years ago, when President Clinton left office, our country was riding high. The world was at peace. People seemed to get along. And our country was having its fourth consecutive year of budget surpluses. In fact, our head of the Federal Reserve said we'd be able to pay off all of our national debt by 2006. It sounds like a fairy tale today, doesn't it? In the last couple of decades, we've lost our way as a country fiscally. First, Congress kneecapped our revenue with three massive tax cuts that largely benefited our highest income citizens, including me. Then our wars in Afghanistan and Iraq added trillions more in debt. Finally, blowout COVID spending was the icing on the cake, putting us $34 trillion in hock. And that is why inflation is hurting all of us. We've destroyed the value of our dollar. Now, certainly, the presidents have all had a role in this mess, but the real culprit is our Congress, because they determine how it is that we spend our money. We must send them packing. We must term limit the Congress. Now, it's been said that without a vision, the people perish. In my campaign, I have a specific means of dealing with issues such as the border, public safety, inflation, and the budget. However, all of those things are going to be difficult to achieve unless we bring about congressional term limits first. It's something that over 80% of us agree on, Republicans and Democrats, because we're all smart enough to know that nothing changes where nothing changes. Thank you so much.
Hello, everybody. My name is Matt Pfeiffer. I'm definitely underdressed, but I appreciate the opportunity for you guys to have me here. I am familiar with the Anderson community. I love the Anderson community. Familiar with Larry the Can Man, if any of you guys have heard of him. So I helped him move way back when. But there's lots of issues that are affecting you and I on a local level and a state level. And there's a lot more bigger issues and topics that are going on than what the mainstream media is talking about. So abortion, transgenders, all of those are important topics, but there's actually issues that are affecting you and me as individuals. So I donated my kidney a year and a half ago to a Muncie police detective, one of my best friends, and I found out as I was going through the process that I could be denied life insurance coverage and I could be denied medical benefits just for being a living donor. And that's a burden for a lot of people. There's so many people that are waiting on the kidney list. This is an issue that can be addressed on the congressional side, but nobody's really talking about it. So for me, I like focusing on the issues that are actually affecting you and me on our day-to-day lives and going from there. So I definitely don't have all the answers. I think I'm the youngest person here, but I'm tired of going to my congresspeople. I've been advocating for foster kids and abused kids and adopted kids for several years. I've been going to state senators and congresspeople trying to push a national database for child abusers, and I get the bill wrote up and it's dead. It just sits there. So I'm tired of having all the solutions and my own congresspeople and state senators are not doing anything about it. So that's why I decided to put my hat in the race. I'm trying to just let people know that there's more important issues going on that are affecting you and me. I aged out of foster care. There's so many issues in the foster care system right now that are going on that people don't really want to talk about. We talk about all these abortion issues, and there's so many kids that are just aging out of foster care with nowhere else to go, with only the clothes on their back. My sister committed suicide a month after she turned 18 and got out of foster care. So how are we addressing those mental health issues that are affecting those kids that are coming out of foster care? Those aren't issues that are being addressed at the state level, unfortunately. In some ways, they have been throughout the years. I've been advocating and testifying on bills, but there's definitely some more things that we can do on the national level, like the Handle With Care program that provides mental health services for young people in schools. That's something that's been tried to be pushed through Congress. So I'm just an oddball in the race of all these other well-qualified people, but I just wanted to give you guys an extra option of who to vote for. So I appreciate your time.
My name is Ryan Fenninger, and I'm a Democrat running to be your next congressman. I live in Carmel with my wife, Christina, 9-year-old daughter, Kate, and 3-year-old son, Jack. For the past two decades, I've built tech companies, created high-paying Hoosier jobs, invested in Indiana businesses spanning life science, advanced manufacturing, and software. In conversation with folks like you around the 5th District, I've heard a lot of concerns about the lack of affordable housing, crushing student debt, jobs leaving our communities. the high cost of groceries and other basic necessities, government taking away our freedoms, and the quality and safety in our schools. I hear you. Today, too many politicians are engaged in divisive partisan politics to all our detriment. They're out of touch with hardworking Hoosiers trying to make ends meet and create a better life for themselves and their families. My message is this. We're all Americans. We are stronger, united, than divided. Now, I'm running because I believe we have a once-in-a-generation opportunity to rebuild our small towns and middle class, to promote policy that makes the American dream more achievable for all of us. And here's the thing. I believe we have the people and the infrastructure and the desire today to do this right here in the 5th District. As your next congressman, I will focus on policies that unite us and lift us all up. I want to solve problems, not create more. I look forward to a spirited discussion tonight on the issues most relevant to 5th District voters. Thank you.
Good evening. I am Deborah Pickett. I also am running as a Democrat. It is a pleasure to be here. I distinguish myself from really all of my colleagues on this podium here by my platform, and my platform has really three components to it. The first one is the protection of our democracy, the protection of our democratic republic. We have people up here who have legal backgrounds, and yet have you heard one word of condemnation against a prior president who was an insurrectionist? Don't you feel any sense of outrage? My platform, my first platform, has to do with protecting and advancing our democratic republic. It is a scaffolding that supports us, that is the source of our prosperity. We are a country that believes in fairness. We believe in the land of laws. We believe that we are better because of our democratic republic. I also believe strongly in our personal rights. Without our democratic republic, we will not have our personal rights. Our personal rights in this country, we value our personal freedoms, our personal rights, and our personal responsibility. That means that we trust you to make decisions on behalf of yourself and your family without government interference. That means that the government does not tell you whether or not you're going to have an abortion, whether or not you're going to have gender-affirming care. It does not tell you. It does not interfere with the personal aspects of your life. Third, I am here because I favor effective and efficient government. Look at what has happened in Congress under the Republican leadership. It's chaos.
Thank you very much. That's your
thank you.
Good evening. I'm L.D. Powell. Thank you to the League of Women Voters, to the attendees tonight here in the room, and those listening on the radio or the live stream. Who I am, I'm a father of three grown boys, a Navy veteran, a lifelong Hoosier, a fourth-generation Hoosier. Why am I here tonight? What brought me here was the crisis at the border. It's continued to get worse, and it continues to get worse every single day. And for the last 18 years, I've been working in the world of recovery, watching our mothers, our fathers, our children being destroyed by the drugs flowing across our border. It's no secret. It's on my website. You can go see it. I have been in recovery myself for 18 years. I had a hospitalization where I was put on powerful painkillers for a while. I came out, one problem solved, another one started, and I had to get help. And I found help at Fairbanks Hospital, Recovery Hospital, and I'm one of the lucky ones. And recovery is possible. It's possible for the people who are being hurt. You may have family members here tonight. Some of you may be even struggling, or you have a family member that's struggling. This is an equal opportunity destroyer. People are perishing, and this is a red alert to me. It's a three-alarm fire. We need to secure the border now. Now, let me tell you about a little something I've learned since I've been in this race. I was a bit naive about some of the behind-the-scenes things that go on in a race. It takes a tremendous amount of money. The system is rigged to the extent that you have to be a career politician or a self-funding millionaire to get your message out. So I'm hoping that you will take the time to go to the web. When I send you a tweet or an email, that you'll take the time to open it. That's the only way that people like me and those who don't have millions or aren't career politicians have a shot at getting our message out. So thank you again to the League of Women Voters for giving us time to do that tonight.
Thanks, Lonnie. Yeah, I couldn't agree more, Lonnie. Career politicians, millionaires. I mean, I'm just a common grassroots guy running, trying to help the people of this district. I'm from here. I'm from Anderson, Indiana. My name's Larry Savage. I have actually supported Ms. Sparks for both of the times that she's ran, but I thought she was dropping out, so I stayed in. But I'm for you guys, us, the people. I'm tired of electing millionaires to go to represent people like us. It's time for us to stop sending money to all these countries that hate us. It's time to start taking care of the people in our own country. We got people that are retirees that can barely make it today in today's economy because of the deflation, the dollars taxed when you earn it, when you spend it, and when you save it. It's ridiculous. It's got to stop. I want to thank the League of Women Voters for having us here tonight. I really appreciate it. I want to introduce three women in my life that mean a lot. My wife. And my 93-year-old grandmother and my mother. It's hard for me to say because my mom, I grew up in a broken home. We were poor. Love you guys. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I am a constitutional Republican. And we have a constitutional republic. And I got involved with politics not because Republican Party is perfect. I got involved with politics because I'm sick and tired of rhino politicians going politics, by election, benefit themselves, and don't care about we the people. And honestly, we can do a lot of talking points here, and I've been in a lot of trenches, and there are some very good people here. But in reality, talking about term limits, I actually not just signed the pledge. I fought in Congress to pass term limits, which failed. And I said, I am not going to be a career politician. And that's why I decided this year, maybe I need to take time off, get my sanity back. But I understood that there are a lot of good people have no chance. And with big money of rhino Republicans, corrupt as hell, destroying this country against very radical agenda. So I had to back in because I hope that I can have an ally like President Trump to get something done. So this race was a lot of dirt, and there are a lot of people don't have record, but my opponent has a record. Chuck Goodrich was with me in legislature, and I voted on pro-life, pro-Second Amendment, to get government under control against China trying to take over country, and he was on the opposite side. So I want to make sure that you guys pay attention. When we in the trenches, who serves the establishment of both party? And who actually willing to fight for you? Because this is a crucial time. If we don't save our country, and if we don't fight the radical left, we are done as a republic. And we do have the greatest republic, and I cannot surrender, and I cannot let it happen. Thank you so much for having me here today.
All right, now, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to move on to the questions and the answers submitted by audience members as the microphone moves down to this side of the dais. The way we'll do this is I will ask one question. All the candidates will have 1 minute to respond, so please mind the timekeeper. When your time has elapsed, pass the microphone to the next candidate and so on. Please be mindful of that time aspect. We want to get through as many of the questions and the issues that the voters are looking to hear about from all of you. So let's begin. The first question from the audience, what is your position on the Redistricting Reform Act of 2024? Mr. Chintala.
See, it's not a Democrat or Republican. It's around the country. It happens that, and the federal government, unfortunately, does not have much to do. It's a state legislation, state government, state one, they redistrict for that. And it's both parties have been doing that. And even if we commission, independent commission you appoint, whoever is the majority, they will still have the major portion of the members. So it's a federal government has no role in it.
So we are representational, and that means that when you are redistricting, that comes out of who's in charge in the state. And it's a problem or an issue on both sides. If you look at Maryland or if you look next door at Illinois, we've got, there's some pretty funny maps over there. If you look at the corner of St. Louis that runs all the way up to Springfield, there's a line of district that captures just that piece. So I think both sides do something where they're protecting what they have, but that's because the state is a conservative or more liberal state, and I think that's just a form of representation.
No, thank you for the question. I know that from a state perspective that the redistricting maps are drawn by the majority, and there was drawn while I was in the state house representing House District 29, and you can just look at the districts and see that we looked at all of the districts, and I believe we did a fair job in making sure, and the courts upheld that, so thank you.
Compared to 4 years ago, this district brought in Howard County, where I reside, and Delaware County. All the voters south of I-465 left the district. So it's six contiguous counties. I appreciate what the League of Women Voters do. You're trying to stand up for the common person, one man, one vote, and stop this drive of the special interest. The courts decide state by state on whether the civil profile and the boundaries are constitutional. And, you know, there will be a constant debate between legislatures, and courts will hold them accountable.
I really have nothing to add in terms of the state implications of what's occurred here. My main addition to this conversation deals with illegal immigrants and the effect that it will have on the potential number of representatives in each state as a result of the explosion of people across the border. It will also potentially have an effect on the Electoral College. Those are some of the main negative issues that I see from election perspective with this border situation.
Well, I don't really think there's anything much more I could say that it hasn't already been discussed before. I know in Delaware County it used to be Greg Pence's district, and I was bummed out that the district was moved, but as they've already stated, at the end of the day it's up to the state and I have no control over it. That's why we as people have to elect the right people into office to do the right thing.
Whether it's a congressional or federal issue or not, I fully support any and all efforts that help us to stave off the erosion of trust in our democracy and in our institutions. I think, and we've already seen a little bit tonight, we have a bit of a win-at-all-cost mentality in politics in this country. And although some candidates may win, I think in general, a lot of us are worse off for it. And so, at the end of the day, things like making sure that candidates are beholden to all of the voters, not just a small percentage of primary voters, and making sure that we have a clear understanding of who's putting money into these races and issues are super important things.
I think that what should be, what is most important about the process of drawing the lines should have to be, it should be a nonpartisan commission that is that takes on that responsibility. And this is probably a time when we would want artificial intelligence or Ryan's business to take over that role, because it would mean that you would take the human element out of that process. Thank you.
Redrawing the lines, having maybe an independent commission do that. I'm a little nervous about AI though, because that's still people programming AI, and so there can be a slant in artificial intelligence. As we saw when some of the historical drawings were done, they didn't come quite out the way that they were accurate. So I'm not a big fan of giving it up to AI. But I do think we can make some improvements, maybe some nonpartisan commissions to oversee it. Some of these crazy districts you see out there are just outrageous. But one man, one vote, that's a great principle. Let's do our best to get back to that so we're all fairly represented.
Thank you. Okay, so I won't get emotional, I swear. Now, when I talk about my mom, I get a little emotional, so I'm sorry. But yeah, gerrymandering the districts, it's just another way for them to control the vote and the people. I'm totally against gerrymandering, but, you know, if the Democrats were in office and they were holding the majority, they'd do the same thing. So it's not really a Republican or a Democrat thing. It's just a way to control you. And, you know, like I said, I'm a common man, grassroots guy. I'm for us, the people. And as long as you keep electing the same people over and over, we're just going to keep getting the same thing. And it's just another way to control you, another way to suppress you. And we got to fight. We got to win. The people of this district, we have good people up here, but I am you. I am a reflection of you, and you're a reflection of me. And we gotta vote and get the right people in office to take care of us. And I'm sick of it, and that's why I'm here fighting for us. Thank you.
Thank you so much. There is no such a thing as nonpartisan. So I think, you know, and it is a bad idea to federalize this issue. What we do need, I agree with someone said here, we need to clarify that only people who are here legally, only citizens, can be part of our census data, because that creates a lot of perverse incentive now. And what's happened at the border can be a huge problem to actually where we can have illegal aliens be a part of some of the states and have more representation where they shouldn't even be here. So I think it's a serious issue, and that should be clarified at the federal level.
Live next question Anderson coming High down School. To Mr. Engling again.
Live from Anderson High School, you're listening to the 5th Congressional Candidate Forum on WHBU and WMUN Wolf Boom Radio.
Yes or no answer, please. Do you support aid to Ukraine?
No blank checks.
I do not. Yes, with accountability.
No, and I'm half Ukrainian.
No.
Yes, assuming a broader worldwide coalition.
Yes, absolutely. They are fighting against the Russians, our enemy.
Yes.
Yes, so we have to support them. We're in a rabbit hole now. So this president's put us in a bad spot.
Only with strategy on oversight, only. No slash fund and blank checks.
Next question to Mr. Goodrich. The microphone's coming back. Oh, sorry, Mr. Chinthala. Right, then to Mr. Goodrich in the next question. Thank you.
No blank checks, and U.S. needs to spend some money into the domestic. We take care of our own homeless people in the country.
Thank you, Mr. Chinthala. Next question for Mr. Goodrich to begin. If elected or if re-elected, would you support the Speaker of the House?
I think it's a great question, and I would at this point.
The Speaker from Louisiana would have my support.
I would at this point.
The Speaker doesn't live in Indiana, so probably not.
As a Democrat, I would not support the current Speaker of the House. However, I would support Hakeem Jeffries. I do believe that the Democrats, based on what we've seen from the Republicans in the recent Congress, would have a much better shot of being well organized.
I also would not favor the current Speaker of the House and would be and very impressed, actually, with how Hakeem Jeffries has managed to keep the Democrats in line and well organized.
Yeah, I think we need to kind of cool things down in Washington. The rhetoric is so hot, the polarization so extreme, that we are the ones suffering while they're out there fighting with each other. So I would be for supporting our speaker and toning things down and getting the folks we sent there to work back to work for us.
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely supporting 100%. We have to.
Mike is a good human being with good heart. I would support him, but I will hold any speaker accountable to the people.
Thank you.
Yes, I would support the Republican speaker in the House, and also I would also support any bipartisan bills and bipartisanship leadership that can work and provide some common sense solutions to the problems.
So I know Speaker Johnson, and I do support him. I think I agree that you have to make sure everyone is doing what they say that they're going to do, and you have to hold them accountable for that, but I do support him. And I think that one thing that needs to happen is Republicans in the House need to take the legislation that they're sending to a Democratic-controlled Senate and send over more conservative legislation so that you can have that negotiation. So when you get legislation back, you're comfortable with where it is back in the House. So I think some of that needs to happen maybe a little bit better, but I also think the House needs to just get to work. And I don't think kicking Speaker Johnson out when they get back in session is going to do anything to get them back to work.
Next question to Mr. Hart now and all of the candidates. Have you signed or are you willing to sign a term limit pledge?
I did sign the term limit pledge. I think when Americans realize they can vote themselves money, it's the end of the republic. I think that was Benjamin Franklin. $34 trillion deficit. The only way I think we stop perverse incentives of personal career over what's best for the people is a term limit. I'm thinking 6 terms in the House, 2 terms in the Senate. It's the only way you check all the growth in government and all the influence in Washington, D.C. I saw in Michigan, when you have term limits, that means that strengthens lobbyists. You know, they don't have a term limit. So you need sharp cookies that come into office on day one that aren't naive and would not be easily manipulated.
My entire candidacy is actually based on term limiting the Congress. That is my number one plank issue, because as I have stressed, nothing will change if nothing changes. And over 80% of Americans, Democrats, Independents, and Republicans want to have that happen. Now, in my campaign, I don't just say this is a nice thing to happen. If you look at my YouTube channel, I have specific videos to talk about how to do it, why to do it, some of the problems associated with our existing Congress in terms of, we have roughly 180 attorneys in Congress. If Congress reflected the number of attorneys that we have in the United States, we'd have 5 in Congress. So attorneys are great when you have a legal issue. They're horrible at getting solutions to problems creatively and efficiently. So again, I don't think the term limits pledge really means that much. We have all kinds of people signing it, and they don't act on it at all. So, and I've talked to that organization.
Thank you.
Yes, I support term limits, and I would sign any pledge. So mainly speaking from experience, so being an advocate for foster kids and abused kids, currently 26 years old, I don't know what's currently happening for the kids that are aging out of foster care unless they tell me. So I'm not young enough to experience that. And sort of like politicians, you get in there for a certain amount of years and you lose touch with what's really going on and what's really affecting you and I on an individual level. So I support term limits, and I believe that there needs to be younger people going into those seats with more innovative ideas.
I'm a firm believer that politics was never meant to be a career. I think that people should serve and do their service and pass it on to the next person. I'm in support of term limits, but I'm also a root cause analysis kind of guy. And so for me, I happen to believe that perhaps more effective than term limits is looking at the rules by which we get legislation approved. People having to be in Congress year after year to rise to be the chairman of a committee in order to make sure a bill gets heard is wrong. I think that takes away from representative democracy. We elect people to Congress, and it takes them a while to be able to be effective as a legislator. So I think not only do we look at term limits, but I think these rules packages that make it so that a small number of people in leadership in a party have outsized power is an important thing to look at as well.
I believe that if our democracy is working properly, elections is your term limit. Thank you.
So I am for term limits plus, and the plus would be reform of our bureaucracies. The bureaucratic state would have unfettered run of our government if we term limit Congress without reforming our bureaucracies. It does take time for a congressman to get some experience and become effective. And if we term limit them out after two terms or three terms, then there's nobody with real experience to go up there and battle the entrenched bureaucracies. And those are the folks that stick around, apply the law. They're the judge, jury, and executioner of the laws that Congress makes. We need to push that responsibility back to Congress. We need to reduce the size of these bureaucracies, the size, power, and scope of influence they have. And then we can do term limits and be safe from the bureaucrats.
Yeah, so term limits at every level, okay? I mean, not just Congress, but I'm talking about even from the precinct committeemen to the Republican chair in this county to elected officials. Everybody should have term limits, and you should have a term limit. I've watched you intimidate a 74-year-old woman trying to look in the election process, and we have a corrupt Republican chair that needs to go. He needs a term limit, and I'm here to fight for you, and we got to fight against that man right there. He's sitting right up there.
Please, folks.
Politics never meant to be a job. It's a tour of duty. You do and go back, live the laws. And not, I just didn't sign pledges. I fought for term limits. Unfortunately, there are too many in establishment of both parties. They do a great talk, but like money and making money on politics. And that's why we're failing. We need to elect these people. We need to right people. We need to make sure that we have right accountability. And I agree at least with one thing that my Democrat colleague said, that we need to have proper rules, not win Pelosi like we had. That's why I fought to change the rules against Kevin McCarthy, and we made a lot of progress this Congress.
Yeah, this term limit pledge, I've been listening to this question last 30 years, people talking about it, but nothing happened anywhere. It requires both bipartisan, both Democrat and Republican, to amend the Constitution and make the term limit possible, which is not going to happen in my lifetime at least, because nobody will have a two-third majority in the Congress. And it's a political vote banking issue that keeps on talking. I think people keep on that issue for life every 4 years.
So clearly there's a large number of members in Washington right now that need to be told to go home. And so I think term limits are important. I signed the term limit pledge. And I think what needs to be discussed is what is the exact number. So I think a good number is six terms in the House, two terms in the Senate. And some of the folks have mentioned this, but the point is that you build enough seniority so that you can actually accomplish what you're talking about, but you don't turn it into a career. This was never supposed to be a career. You go, you do the work of the people that sent you, and then you go home.
And thank you for the question. I love new ideas. I love competition. I have signed the term limit pledge and believe in that. But I can tell you, I would like to see reform also, because I think you got to term limit major staff too. Because once you term limit the elected official, then all of a sudden you have staff running the country. And I believe that the major staff should actually be term limited too. Because without term limits and without bringing new folks in, you really lose the innovation and the innovative approach to actually building new law for the United States that really helps the people.
Thank you. The next question is to Mr. Mulader. And I would please ask the audience, we appreciate your excitement for being here tonight to be part of the process, but please no reactions as best you can during each of the candidates' answers. New question to all the candidates. I'm sure you've all heard of the Building Civic Bridges Act. And what the audience member that wrote this question would like to know is, what are your thoughts on the continued and extreme polarization of our politics? 1 minute to each candidate.
Well, certainly that's an issue. And again, I think we have tribes here in Washington, D.C. right now where the main focus is winning on an issue. And the way I have structured my campaign is to focus on the 80% of people that want to get issues done, be it in terms of term limits or reproductive rights or a whole variety of other issues. So right now in Congress, we have the 20% of people, the 10% on each side of the political spectrum that are gaining 80% of the control, either be it on MSNBC or Fox and so forth. Again, a lot of arguing, a lot of complaining, but very little results. And again, that's why I go back to term limits as being such a critical issue to get newer minds, younger minds, to essentially get us on the right track. Thank you so much.
Yes, I do think that politics is becoming polarizing, and I think we're feeding into that. We're contributing factors to that. I think the news is a contributing factor to that. I think it takes more people like you and I and thousands of people that don't vote, unfortunately, to step up and really hold our elected officials accountable and say, hey, this is an issue right now that's happening now and affecting me in my day-to-day life. Let's stop talking about all these national topics that are everybody wants to talk about. Let's talk about issues that are actually affecting you and I. So it's about more of bringing those people out that aren't voting and getting them to hold their officials accountable and to actually focusing on the issues that are actually affecting you and I on our day-to-day lives.
I think we have a real issue in this country with politicians professing to be patriots, but thinking they're literally at war with half of this country. I've seen it in recent debates. We see it on the news every day. Saw a congresswoman the other day say that if you're not fully on board with the MAGA agenda, you are a bigger threat to the country than Vladimir Putin. I find that really hard to believe. Let me say it this way. In his first inaugural address at the height of Civil War tension, even Abraham Lincoln was smart enough to say that we are not friends, or we are not enemies, but friends. And I think that is something that a lot of us have forgotten, that we may have different ideas on how to do something, but at the end of the day, we all want what's best for this country.
Well, I just want to say that when we're talking about term limits here, I just want to go back to that for 1 minute. Isn't it interesting how everyone here has said they were in favor of term limits, and yet they were not willing to challenge Donald Trump, who wanted to overtake and overturn the results of the 2020 election? One reason why I think there is a sense of lack of civility right now is because we feel that there is a party, the Republican Party, that is not complying with the rules and complying with the laws that we all agree to in the Constitution. When people do not follow the rules and they do not follow the proper protocols, then you begin to have a lot of infighting. Thank you.
Yeah, definitely there's polarization in politics. It's fed by the media. The media needs you to watch the news. So nothing like a good fight to get viewers to watch it. And we feed into it because we watch it. And then also the two parties in Washington fundraise off of it. You know, a lot of those fighting is done to raise money and raise funds. They get you upset, think there's a boogeyman, we're going to come in and rescue you, send us some money, and we'll get it done for you. And then it's also perpetrated by the politics, even local. Your mailbox is going to fill up now over the next few weeks with negative ads, politicians attacking each other, calling each other horrible names, and because they know that negative campaigning works, and it works because we react to it. So I'd challenge you to go beyond the negative ads and do your homework and get to the real substantive issues instead of falling for the name calling.
Thank you. Yeah, there's definitely polarization in politics. I agree with that. Listen, you just talk about negative ads, and I agree, and I appreciate that. I don't know if you notice in your mailers, you're getting tons of stuff from Chuck and on the TV. I've been up on stage now, for about 2.5 hours with this man. He's supposed to be a leader. I don't see any leadership from him at all because he has been face-to-face with Victoria several times and has yet to confront her on stage. That's not a leader we want. We want people that are going to lead. We want people that are going to protect us. And it's time to get these millionaires out of politics. He supported House Bill 1338, which is to silence the people when they go to a county meeting or to a city meeting. He wants to shut you down, have you jailed. You voted for that. And it's something that's terrible and it's wrong. We're Americans. We deserve to be heard. And we should be able to go to our county and city councils and be heard and hold them accountable to their face and not be jailed for it.
The problem is we have in politics, we have too many establishment politicians that want to get rich in political job, get their friends rich in political job, and get this money back and tell you crazy lies and hope you're going to believe in that. And that is the problem what became. And if we don't resolve this problem, we're going to fail as a republic. As someone who tried to find at least common ground on some of the issue, I actually move legislation, bipartisan on healthcare transparency, hasn't been done in decades in Congress, move fiscal commission, deal with crushing debt and inflation, and some of the toughest legislation on China. Because I understand we have to fight. There are some issues we will never agree, but there are some issues for national security we have to get together. But unfortunately, President Biden and Chuck Schumer are too powerful, and we couldn't stand against the Senate. That's why we have to have new leadership, and I'll deliver it, and hopefully even on a bipartisan basis for you, because it's important.
Live from Anderson High School, you're listening to the Candidate Forum by the League of Women Voters. We pause 10 seconds for station identification.
This is the new WMUN Muncie.
85% of the people who win in the primary, they will win in the general election. And that's only 20-25% of the population votes in the primary. We need to unite within the party. We need to have ability to work with the other party to have a common dialogue or a cup of coffee or a meal. That we need to bring the leaders who can talk about that. Thank you.
Polarization. So we're certainly polarized right now, although if you look, I don't think anyone in the last decade or so has been beaten almost to death in the Senate with a cane, and that happened already in our history. So you're kidding yourself if you think that it's the most polarized we've ever been. But I do think the important thing here is too many people are going to Washington to say, let me build my own brand. Let me just yell about this on TV and not let me go to get to the work of the people. I think more people need to say, let me take the conservative ideals that are sending me there back to the Constitution, how the founders wanted this country to be run, pull that back over and get to work.
Yeah, thank you for the question. I would say that I appreciate the comments, but I believe the issue with polarization is to do with singular bill issues. We pile these bills together on stuff that no one can vote on. That's why you have polarization. We need to hold our elected officials accountable to single issue bills. And I can tell you, all you have to do is look at my state record and look at my bipartisan efforts across the state and workforce development, all in education, you name it, it's all there. So thank you very much.
If I would be your representative, I would be committed to convicted civility. When we were at Taylor University, what that meant was you really stand up for your convictions. You have a backbone, you don't back down. At the same time, you treat everybody else with respect. Now, we see that at the dinner table, we see it in our families. I can remember when I was working in the House, it got so heated we would just step out of conference committee, all Republicans would step out. We've got a problem now. The cultural views on the coast are so different than the cultural and the values held in the Midwest and many of the states in the country. That creates a lot of issues when you have debates nationally. So I think you treat people with respect, but at the same time, you hold to your convictions. When you do that, you can have honest discussion and actually solutions that you bring out and solve problems.
All right, next question. Many states have legalized cannabis. The audience member wants to know if you would favor decriminalization on a federal level.
Yes, so great question. Glad I got it. So I'm a police officer as well. So to be completely honest, I have some family in Colorado. I don't see a problem with weed. I have never done it personally. But to be completely honest, I think it needs to be regulated just like DUIs are, just like alcohol. And especially I've lived in apartments where the smell next door to the neighbor is getting into my apartment and reeking my place up. So Granted, do I think it needs to be legalized? Yes, we can tax it and put a lot of that money towards social services areas. But I do think that there needs to be some regulations, especially in terms of doing it under the influence. Even in Colorado, all over Colorado, I go there for the holidays with my family, and there's signs that the state pays for, don't drive buzz. So, I mean, they legalize it, and as you can see, that there is increases in crashes and things. So how do you keep people safe at the same time? As you can see in Oregon, though, decriminalizing harder drugs doesn't go so well, as they just criminalize hard drugs again. So, yes, I do support decriminalizing it. Thank you.
I think there's ample evidence and studies now to suggest there are medicinal benefits for medical marijuana, and so I do support medical marijuana on a national basis. I also believe that we, as a Congress, should take the opportunity to review the results from various states' regulation of recreational marijuana, understand how well, where the positives and negatives have been, and perhaps it is time to look at a more cohesive national strategy.
I also favor legalizing medicinal marijuana. I do have concerns about recreational marijuana. I am concerned about the impact of marijuana on the development, the brain development. I would like to see more studies done on it, particularly for young people and for old people. We can look at how those people who have been taking it illegally for a while. And anyway, studies need to be done on the impact on the brain. Thank you.
Look, as someone who's been in recovery and in the recovery community for 18 years, I am against legalization of marijuana. It's a gateway drug, and we're kidding ourselves if we think that people are just going to stop at using marijuana, or many people. It will lead to harder drugs, and it does impact the development of young brains. And the marijuana today is not your grandpa's marijuana. It is very potent. And it does a lot more damage to developing brains. So also, I talked recently to a research and drug developer who works with other pharmaceutical or plant-based drugs, and she says, we have other plant-based drugs that are more effective and better without the side effects of marijuana. Medical marijuana is a bit of a canard. It may have some limited use, but there's other plant-based drugs out there that do not have the risk that marijuana does.
Yeah, so the legalization of marijuana, I believe Michigan had $8 billion surplus in taxes last year. They were able to do a lot of stuff with the money they got. Now, I used to be a firefighter. My son's a correction officer, 27 years as a correction officer. I think it's terrible to throw somebody in prison for marijuana. I've seen lives ruined over it. I think it's time to legalize it. They have it just needs to be legalized. I was at a stoplight. Let me tell you a story. There's a video floating around on Facebook. Somebody took a video of me. I was at a stoplight. A man was almost in cardiac respiratory arrest. He had got marijuana off the streets that had fentanyl in it. I tried my butt off to save his life. Did CPR on him. I mean, you can watch it. It's on video. And that with the fentanyl and the stuff that they're putting in the pot, I think it needs to be legalized, and that's why I mean, the safety of the drug is controlled.
I don't support legalizing it because it's already proven that it has significant effects, especially on adolescent brain. But I truly agree with Larry on one issue. We do need to make sure that punishment does fit the crime. We sometimes have harsher crimes for low-level offenders, with some drug traffickers or human traffickers. And I actually work on this criminal justice reforms. Really, this is a state issue, but when I was state senator, I actually work on that and give people second chances, because we cannot be destroying people's lives. But I think we need to be careful before we're talking about legalization of something like that.
Yeah, if you go to my YouTube, there is a video on Raju for Congress YouTube channel. The video which we have done on the legalization of federal legalization of medical marijuana has more than 135,000 views. It's a federal legalization of why I'm supporting federal legalization. That video explains how it helps mostly dying patients. I've seen, I come from a healthcare background. I've seen patients dying in the nursing homes more than 100 year olds. So I'm all for it, but it has to be medical marijuana. It started using 4,800 years ago. This has been used in the history for 4,800 years.
So the studies have already been done, and one of the more recent ones that came out said that there is a direct link between young people and smoking marijuana and how it affects your brain, specifically with young men, and a lot of that is schizophrenia. And I think that I'm not willing to sacrifice my child's future for tax dollars now. So no, I'm not against legal, or I am not for legalizing marijuana, specifically as it relates to young people.
Yeah, thank you. I'm actually not in favor of legalizing marijuana either. You hear the discussion about tax dollars, and I can tell I'm not willing to give up what I consider a real problem and a lead-in drug that leads to a heavier abuse than what we currently have due to tax dollars. I believe that we have to support our veterans and we have to support the folks with mental health, but I do not believe that legalizing marijuana is the way to do that.
I'm very opposed to legalizing marijuana. When I prosecuted cases, I concentrated on drugged and drunk driving. Every fatality I had be like a Long Island iced tea, and I mix it with marijuana. On the central nervous system, you're three times with that marijuana, the ability to make decisions, three times impaired. I would see people drive into someone one step from a curb. I talk to employers up in northern Indiana. Their problem is people cross the Michigan line, they get marijuana, and they come back after lunch, and they're not as productive. It's definitely a gateway drug. If you look at the data outside Colorado, the states are very opposed because it's caused a lot more fatalities. I do think there's a place for doctors to prescribe pain relief for veterans that served our country, and that's where we would use that medicinally.
You know, I have a grassroots campaign, meaning that I actually walk into businesses, talk to them, and so forth. And I've been into a number of smoke shops and vape shops where I've been asked this exact question. And my response to them is, for all intents and purposes, marijuana is legal in Indiana right now through the 2017 Farm Bill, where you can buy legally Delta 8 and Delta 9. I've actually tried it once. It's a lot more powerful than the stuff they had back in the 70s. So for all intents and purposes, you know, whoever asked that question, you know that it's basically legal right now. I think the main issue, a couple things. One, you have a law enforcement matter because those types of substances stay in your body for a long period of time. You could have taken it, and a day or two later, you can be charged with essentially being impaired even though you're not under the influence. So that's one issue. And then you have a number of...
Thank you, Mr. Mulator. Next question to Mr. Feniger, I believe. We are up to Mr. Feniger. Yes. The question from the audience member to the candidates, do you support a ban on assault-style rifles and high-capacity magazines?
So I'm a gun owner, and I believe in the Second Amendment. That being said, I believe the Second Amendment has limits. If it didn't, we'd have people at the range on the weekend with bazookas. I am sick and tired of turning on the news, listening to someone be interviewed about the latest mass shooting, talking about how the suspect was known to their community as a danger to themselves and to the community, and yet there were no vehicles in place to deal with it effectively. So I am in favor of anything that makes it harder for people to have weapons that shouldn't, whether it's red flag law strengthening or universal background checks. I think it's insane that it's easier to buy a gun off Craigslist than it is from a gun store. So I think I will leave it broadly. I think it depends on the specific legislation, but the bottom line is I'm in favor of anything that makes it a little bit more challenging for people to commit crimes when they are upset or angry.
As a former Army reservist and someone who trained with an M16 in basic training, we had to spend a lot of time training with our weapon. When we were finished with it at the end of the night, it had to be locked up. We had serial numbers for it. I would expect the same type of protocols in our personal homes. I definitely am opposed to assault weapons on the streets. I also am very much in favor of the red flag laws, and I believe that all people in the community should feel safe. Thank you.
Yes, I'm a member of the NRA, hunter, gun owner. I don't believe the problem necessarily is guns. It's we do not enforce the laws that we have on the books. Criminals today are not afraid of being prosecuted. They know that they're going to commit a crime, they're going to go in, and the legal system is going to put them right back out on the street to commit another crime. So I would be for toughening the laws and prosecuting on the laws that we currently have in place. Another law is not going to stop the gun violence. The criminals do not fear the law today. So until they fear the law and they fear getting locked up or paying the price for their crimes, you know, they're going to have the guns, and then those of us who don't won't be able to defend ourselves.
Thank you.
Yes, I'm totally against anybody taking my weapons away. You're not going to take them. The assault rifle stuff, if you guys remember, a lot of you people here live in Massa County. Alexandria was the last year had an active shooter, supposedly. My kids went to school there. You want to talk about your heart dropping? I was in LA from Anderson in about 10 minutes. It's a scary thing because that hit home. That was real. I thought my kid was in danger. He was locked down. I couldn't get a hold of him for 2 or 3 hours. We had parents waiting around looking for an active shooter. It's very scary. But the bad guys have guns. As long as the bad guys have them, you better keep yours. Don't ever bow down to this government and let them take your weapons away. It's a God-given right. You're allowed to have them. Use them the right way, and we're good. But as long as the bad guys have them, we need to keep our weapons and to protect us from the government and the bad guys. We need that guy standing back there in the corner, that police officer, he's got training, he knows what to do in those situations, and we have to trust in our laws and our officers.
I'm a strong supporter of Second Amendment. Without the Second, we don't have the First. And we'll have a lot of talking points here, but I actually have a record. I've been endorsed by NRA, but I fought against gun control. Actually, my colleague in State House, Chuck Goodrich, voted to expand definition of machine gun, which is actually a power grab and gun control. So I think let's look at the record. I will always stand for that because I grew up in the tyranny, and I understand this is the right that makes us free as individual. That is a hill to die on. If we don't have that right, we will have no constitutional right. And, you know, criminals will always have guns. They have it in any country. This is the right for law-abiding citizens to defend themselves against tyranny, domestic and foreign. And this is a very important right. So always stand with it.
I am pro-Second Amendment. But we already have checks and balances. The Constitution of United States of America is the most powerful document on the planet. Every amendment, First Amendment, Second Amendment, you go on that, they give freedom to follow. That's why this country is the most powerful country on earth. That's why we come here. There are less criminals that come to your house in this country because many know that we own the guns. So I'm all about pro Second Amendment, but we need to have checks and balances, especially mental health issues and who owns it and how. Education is very important when you are buying the guns. Thank you.
I will always work to protect the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment is not for hunting or target practice. It's to protect yourself against a tyrannical government. That's why it's in the Constitution. If we don't have the Second Amendment, we don't have the First Amendment. And so we have to protect the Second. There's a couple things too. Assault style rifles, that's a term that nobody even knows what it means. It's cosmetic changes on a weapon that you could have otherwise. That doesn't make sense. Same thing with high capacity magazines. What is it, 10, 12, 15? Nobody knows because they picked a number out of a hat. That doesn't make sense. And so we have to look at this logically, and we have to say, these are for your protection and your protection against the government. We also have to enforce our current laws. I appreciate that, Lonnie, because we don't need new laws on this. We have to say, prosecute what's happening now and make sure that people understand if you commit a crime, you will be held accountable.
Yeah, I support the Second Amendment with everything I have. It seems the voting record's being checked, so I'm the only one up here that voted for constitutional carry in the state of Indiana, which aligned the Indiana law with the federal law. We have plenty of laws to keep people safe. We just have to prosecute the folks that that are breaking the law. And not only that, but never, as said, never give up your guns, because I can tell you, the bad guys always have them, and the gun isn't the problem.
I'm a member of the NRA. Second Amendment's a fundamental right. And I think we need to be tougher on our prosecution of felons that are habitual offenders. They need to do time. We've got to keep the guns out of the hands of the bad guys. That's the issue. And in some locales, that's not being done. I've seen the red law work in courts. Good judges allow a police officer to come in, explain why a gun needed to be taken, like a domestic violence situation. And they determine how much time's needed for everybody to cool down and if a gun should be returned. So I think we have a civil and a wise process in place, and that Constitution protects us all, and it protects that right.
My basic premise is that we need to enforce our existing laws. I do have a legal issue, though, that I'm proposing that would help in this way. On my website, patrickinforcongress.com, I have a legal reform that would allow citizens to sue district attorneys and prosecutors for negligence that allow revolving door criminals to continue through the system and harm innocent people. So in one situation, let's say you just get beat up, an ordinary citizen would be able to get their actual damages plus a $250,000 civil penalty. If you're a police officer or emergency responder, same thing, $500,000 penalty. If the bad guy causes death, and you're a regular citizen, $5 million. If you're a police officer, emergency responder, as it was in Elwood here a couple years ago, a $10 million civil penalty against the prosecutor and their governmental authority. That will change behavior in terms of prosecution of gun crimes. Thank you.
No, I don't support any ban on Second Amendment at all. And I did hear somebody say that we'd be running around with bazookas. I understand your point, but you got to understand when the Constitution was written and why it was written in terms of at the time we were protected, you have to protect us from a tyrannical government. That's not saying I'm encouraging anybody to be part of a militia or anything like that at all. Just at the end of the day, we need to protect our rights and protect the Constitution. And I do believe and support more education in terms of gun safety, and try to implement more programs on the local level in the communities to help prevent those situations from happening with people with bad intentions still having guns. As we have a revolving door of criminals going out in the streets, being charged with guns, and then being let back out, and the next day they go buy another one off the street. So something needs to be done, and something does need to be addressed about those. But don't take our rights away from me that's doing everything legally and the right way that I need to do it.
Next question to be first answered by Ms. Pickett is on health care. In fact, we received several questions from the audience tonight. The question, do you think corporate health care has too much power over individual choice? How can we put more power over health care into the hands of individuals? Another audience member cited a high drug charge problem where this person has a drug that costs them $800 a month. Is there something that you think that you can do, if elected, to deal with that issue?
Well, one, I would say that under the Biden administration, that this is an issue that they have found to be very important, and they have worked to try to address the high price of pharmaceutical drugs. And now you can spend $35 at max for your insulin a month. So I think that shows that there is certainly the Biden administration and the Democrats have been working towards that issue. I personally am in favor of universal health care. Our system right now is very complex. It is very onerous to navigate. It's very expensive. People have a very difficult time being even in compliant with the different programs that have evolved over time. And so I think that what makes best sense for Americans at this time is to have programs which they do not, that they are automatically enrolled in, and that you have a system that works similar to Medicare. You have basic health care, and then if you want supplemental care, you end up paying for it. Thank you.
Well, on the Biden administration, he's recently been pushing to eliminate Medicare Advantage or scale it back, which takes competition out of the marketplace and will drive costs up. Anytime government sticks its nose into an area, costs go up, efficiencies go down, service goes down. So for me, as a conservative Republican, the free market is our best chance of getting costs down, services up, and affordable health care. We've got to reintroduce the market forces back into our health care system. It's not more government regulation. It's not more government is going to be the answer. We've got plenty of government, and we've got more problems than ever. So I say let's give the free market more of an opportunity to address the health care needs of our people, get government out, and get all these people between me and my doctor out of the way, and we'll see the cost drop down, competition go up, choice go up, and we'll have better outcomes.
Thanks, sir. Yeah, so we all know the insurance dictates how we're all treated as patients and people in this country. The healthcare providers' hands are tied. We have great medicine out there that we can't treat our people with because we can't afford it. This is about socialism. I believe that every person in America deserves healthcare, affordable healthcare, so they can be treated. But we're poor. We're middle class. We don't really matter. And we got to take it back to where we matter again. We got to send a message to the people in Washington, D.C. that we want health care, affordable health care, but yet we send billions and trillions of dollars to other countries to take care of them, and they don't pay the same prices we pay for medicine. They pay a lot lower prices than we pay. We're being robbed. We're being fleeced as Americans, and we need to stand up for our doctors and our nurses and the people that are in the trenches. We have medicine that can cure a lot of things, and we set back and we let this government control how we're treated. We got to take it back, and we got to do it now. We got to do it this election. We have no more time to wait.
Thank you. Number one, lobby in Washington, D.C., hospital monopolies. Number two, insurance. Number three, big pharma. Indiana has some of the highest price of health care in the country, some of the lowest outcomes. When I was state senator, I picked this hill to die on. One of six Hoosiers is in insolvency because of medical debt. I forced Governor Holcomb with threatening with articles in New York Times and Wall Street Journal. I put pressure on McCarthy to try to push these bills, and we were able to have more hearing on health care in Congress than in decades. You know, but that is one of the toughest issues. I was forced Republicans to do it, but when Jeffries, Biden, and Schumer with their monopolies figure out that I'm trying to put this in our debt commission, in our debt ceiling increase legislation, they start whipping Democrats, and they all folded on this issue. Money is so corrupt and big, but this is an issue we need to resolve. It's one-third of our national debt and spending. One third is related to health care. It's unacceptable.
Live from Anderson High School, you're listening to the 5th District Congressional District Forum.
Yeah, my background is a healthcare. I practiced 25 years in the rehab and the hospital and nursing home industry. Healthcare has a complex issues. It needs to be addressed. It needs to be addressed in such a way the cost will come down. There should be accountability and a transparency when you go and see the physician or in the hospital when you go to emergency room. How do we do that? We have to create a more competition for the negotiate with the insurance premiums, import prescription drugs. I believe in the free global market. And also fraud, we need to make cut down some of these deregulate some of the Congress has done so much regulations into this healthcare system. And I was talking to somebody, they pay more administration cost in the hospital than clinical staff just to be in compliance with the federal regulations. I will deregulate some of those not using not effective regulations when I become the congressman. Thank you.
So three things. We need more competition with our medical providers and with insurance, specifically state to state. The second thing we need to do is make sure that we root out the waste, fraud, and abuse that we see so much of, and have better guardrails in place to make sure that that's not happening. And then the third thing, and importantly, is transparency. So when I go into the doctor's office, I need to know, what am I going to pay for this service before I'm put on the hook for it? And that'll help with surprise billing as well. So when you look at your favorite parts of the government, right, the DMV and the TSA, if you look at them, you say, I like spending time here. That's what's going to happen when you say, hey, government, I want you to be more in charge of what we're doing in the healthcare space. That's the wrong answer. The government needs to be less involved and have more free market and more competition when it comes to the healthcare side.
Yeah, thank you for the question. I agree that we need to get government out of healthcare. We need to open up the free market. We need to pay attention to these mergers and acquisitions that are driving basically competition out of business. And when you think about healthcare, you got to get the patient connected with the doctor. I appreciate having a doctor up here because you know that the best healthcare in the United States comes when you have primary care directly with the patient and giving the patient the choice. And right now, there's no choice because the insurance companies control what health care you're getting and where you're going to get it. And so we got to get that out of there, root that out, and make sure you have a direct relationship with your doctor.
In helping Senator Coates, in the early 90s, I worked with a team and we created the health savings account. That's one small piece in the puzzle that helps. The big debate was, should health insurance be more like auto insurance? I'm very opposed to President Obama's reforms. Many of my clients would try the gold platinum plans. If they say it's the Affordable Care Act, it's so unaffordable they can't afford health care. 50% of the bankruptcies were heart attacks and cancer between 60 and 65 pre-Medicare. Most of the uninsured work full-time or part-time, or they're a child, but they're at businesses with less than 25 employees. They don't have profit margins to offer health care. I think we have to build on business commonality, let businesses cross state lines. We need to invest more resources in community-based care so people with asthma, people with diabetes can go to primary care practitioner at a community health center, a doctor that's not an agent of the state. We've got to get more power back to the doctors, less power to hospitals. Thank you.
I've got several different ideas in this particular area. You know, surprisingly, the United States is one of two countries in the world that permit pharmaceutical advertising on TV. The other is New Zealand. What that is leading to oftentimes is increased prescription drug prices because of all these advertising costs being passed on. The other thing that ends up happening is that we have all these people that are watching these ads and say, oh, I think I have that ailment too. So I think we should investigate essentially removing ads just as if they were cigarette ads. I think another thing we need to look at is review removing the tax-exempt status for a number of hospitals because they are anything other than tax-exempt in many cases. They don't satisfy their charity care standards. I think we also need to enforce some of the non-competition provisions. We have a number of doctor practices that are being forced to be sold to hospitals, and consequently what happens is the hospital then raises the prices afterwards. And then finally, I have to stop. I was just getting on a roll.
Yeah, so I have a few things that I'd like to cover. So the costs are going up for a lot of people, especially the older folks, in terms of their Medicare costs, their rent's going up, their food costs are going up, but their Social Security is not really going up. So it's an issue that's affecting especially the older folks right now. I had a meeting today. Somebody came into the office and was expressing how they work for IU Health, and they're a police officer, and they went to an IU Health facility to get lab work done. The IU Health charged him $200, and then IU Health only paid, his insurance only paid $50. So he had to pay the $150, and he works for the healthcare facility. That is an issue that's affecting a lot of people in the community. And the other one is, case in point, the person I donated my kidney to. In order for him to donate his, or for me to donate my kidney to him, he had to pay for Medicare for the rest of his life, so I'm covered if anything ever happens to me. That shouldn't be a cause to say whether or not he wants to donate a kidney or not. He has four kids. I told him not to worry about it. He doesn't have to pay. I'll take care of things on my own. But that shouldn't be a reason. And so there's a lot of people that are affected by these issues.
In this country, we have world-class healthcare facilities and world-class healthcare providers. But what we lack is a world-class way to pay for it. Now, I've heard a lot of talk up here, as an aside, about taking government out of healthcare and letting the free market handle it. I'm a capitalist. I've built businesses for the last two decades. In this one case, I would point out that the free market is what stands between you and your doctor and jacks up the costs. Now, there are a few things we need to look at here. Number one, and I believe health savings accounts came up. In this country, it is widely known that more than half of Americans don't have $1,000 set aside for an emergency. Yet, the average deductible on a healthcare plan is far exceeds that. Second, we need to look at the things conspiring to jack up costs, whether it's hospital groups buying physician practices or insurance companies vertically integrating by buying PBMs or other companies and then never passing along the savings to consumers.
Next question is about the border, and several of the audience members have asked several questions which are specifically asking for what you think needs to happen to secure our southern border.
So yeah, the border is the primary reason I got in the race. It's the passion, it's my passion to go and secure our borders. As someone who served in the military and put my all on the line to defend our country, I'm sitting back watching the career politicians, the people in Washington, D.C. do nothing to secure our borders, and our people are perishing and paying the price. Bad people, bad drugs are flooding our country, and they're wiping out people in our communities. I just met with folks up in Marion and Howard County, and they're all impacted by this. So what we need to do is enact H.R. 2, put more people on the border. We need to also have strong trade negotiations with China that's creating these precursors and then giving them to Mexico, who's then finishing the job and then importing it into the United States. We need to make it so costly to these countries that they stop and put their thumb on these bad actors like they could. They have the ability to stop it, and we need to, as a country, and is why I'm going to Congress, is to use legislation to enforce China and Mexico to stop it.
Thank you, Lonnie. Okay, so I honestly believe that the border needs a full military response at this point. I mean, just drive around town, you see Mexican flags hanging off people's houses. You see police officers being assaulted by illegal immigrants in New York City. It's got to stop. We have to protect our police officers. We have to protect our doctors, our EMTs. Everybody's out there on the front lines with these folks. They're not here to be our friends. They're here. There's a lot of military-aged men coming across that border without wives and without children, and they're going to be seeds in this country. When hell breaks loose, we have all kinds of people in this country we can't account for. We have a weak president right now that doesn't know where he's at and when, whatever he's doing. I don't know what the hell he's doing. But anyway, it is time to put a full military response on the border, detain the people as soon as they cross them, send them back. You arrest an illegal here in this country. I'm not saying be mean to them, detain them, send them back. We can't take it anymore. It's a strain on our country, a strain on our healthcare system. It's a strain on everything we do. We already pay too much money in taxes. We have to protect our country. Take these damn flags off your houses. They're not American flags. My uncle fought for this country in Vietnam. So
thank you, sir.
It is time to take our country back.
Thank you. I think the first, the most important thing need to happen, we need to elect President Trump to secure the border. But in the meantime, I think we have to hold the ground. And we actually had a lot of conservatives fight real tough battles because it's an agenda driven, you know, and we know what's happening. It's insanity. It's a serious national security risk. Probably I've spent in Texas more time than in, you know, than any other person from, you know, that except Texas representative, because I know that state of Texas fight for all of us, and we need to help them. We need to have proper legislation. We need to make sure that we are going to have, you know, remain in Mexico policy, and we need to make sure that we do not allow illegals, you know, to infiltrate our country. This is an invasion, and I'm a legal immigrant, and I appreciate this country is created by legal immigrants, but we are not lawlessness. But my opponent actually campaigned in D.C. to legalize illegals because they're good for his business, free cheap labor. That's what is destroying our country. We have too many rhino Republicans that are lying and not holding the ground on the border.
You're listening to WMUN and WHBU.
I'm a legal immigrant. It took me 16 years to get my passport. I came in 1994 and I got my passport in 2010. It took me right way to get a southern border is a national security threat to this country. Open border is no border. We must close the border. Who is coming into this country, we don't know. We don't even screen them. We are putting them in our hotels. We must hold accountable the Mexican government. We must use all the resources from our government to protect that border and make sure no drugs or no terrorists are entering into this country. We must protect the border and close the border and make sure we continue to provide legal immigration. We must increase our legal immigration system, streamline the process that can be helpful. We can recruit more healthcare professionals if we streamline our legal immigration system from H-1B visa to green card to citizenship, which I went through. The 65,000 visa, H-1B visas, needs to be increased because we will have 1 million shortage of the jobs in this country in the next 20 years. We must prepare for that. Thank you.
So I've been to the border in Texas and to the border in Arizona, and the cartels in most cases are better at this than we are. In Texas, they line up 10,000 migrants on the other side and they say, you don't go until we tell you to go. And then when they cross, the Border Patrol agents have to collapse off the rest of the wall and then they're apprehended. And what happens when they collapse off of the wall? That's when the cartels send across what they actually want to have here. We need to do three things. One, stop the incentives that are drawing folks up from Central and South America. They know when you get here that you're going to get travel into the country, you're going to get a stay somewhere across the country, and in a lot of cases, you're going to get a debit card to fund you while you're here. And then it's just a pinky swear that you'll show up to your court date in Milwaukee or wherever it is in a year. That's not going to happen. The second thing we need to do is finish building the wall. The Border Patrol agents need an impediment when folks are coming across to make sure they can do their job. And the last thing we need to do is fully resource our Border Patrol agents to make sure they can do their job. There's 8 million people that have come across the border in the last 3 years. That's 10 times the size of the 5th Congressional District.
Thank you. I appreciate signing the resolution to send the Indiana National Guard to the border to help Texas to give to the governor. I can tell you we have to build the wall. We literally have to support. We have to get rid of the bloated spending in our government and take that money and send it to our border security agents. We have to take the handcuffs off them so that they can actually do their job, because right now the Biden administration, Congress said, hey, we're not going to do that. And so the idea is, build the wall, support our agents, make sure that the illegals are not coming in, and of course we got to get rid of the incentives for folks to come here.
Number one issue, you've got to build the wall, but there are parts in Texas, I saw it at Baylor, that river will meander for miles. So you've got to have surveillance technology, military needs to be involved, night vision. We adopted two children from Romania. I'm all for immigration. We need to modernize the work visa. We need to modernize the asylum system. But I do not think illegal aliens should be able to vote in the United States. The border issue, my nephew was an ICE agent. Local law enforcement in New Mexico would call him in on stops of cars. Their local protocols wouldn't allow them to use guns and enforce the law like they should. They had to bring in an ICE agent. We've got to up the number of ICE agents, up the number of Border Patrol. This is number one issue. These people are coming in from Russia and China, and they pose a problem. No national security background check. Chinese, the communists know who's here and why, and we've got to stop that.
Thank you. I think step number one is congressional term limits. You know, you talked a little bit about the term limits pledge earlier. It's like making the Boy Scout pledge. It's really nothing. It has no effect from U.S. term limits. The reason being is that 80% of Americans want to have legal immigration, but 80% of Americans don't want to have illegal immigration. We need to have people in Congress that essentially have those same views. So that's one. Secondly, no amnesty at all. You know, there will be no incentive. I think we need to build a hard-to-penetrate wall similar to what Egypt just did on the border with Gaza. And then to levy massive tariffs against Mexico for enabling the crossage of all these illegal immigrants through and into the United States, similar for China, that are allowing the exportation of the basic chemicals for fentanyl coming into the U.S. So those are four basic items we can deal with this issue. Thanks.
Yeah, so I believe there needs to be stricter border laws, or the ones on the books already, to enforce them, actually, instead of using our agents as social workers. But I have a little firsthand knowledge. I met a girl in Mexico City, a young lady, a year and a half ago, and we started the tourist visa process, and our tourist visa actually got denied by the agents because she was in school to be a lawyer, and she had just graduated, and she didn't have a degree in her profession. So we decided to look into the fiancé visa route, and it was after waiting a year and a half just for her tourist visa appointment. We looked again, and it was 850 days just to get an appointment to see a Border Patrol agent about getting a fiancé visa. That is something that is outrageous when I can go to Hong Kong, and it's 2 days for a wait time. So I think those numbers need to be addressed and looked at for sure. And I've been to some crazy parts of Mexico. I've showered outside in the trees with blankets in the trees out of a five-gallon bucket of water. That's the way people live there. That's how a majority of the people in Mexico live. And I understand they're coming here for a better life, but a lot of them live that life.
Thank you very much.
I come from a family of immigrants, as I suspect many people in this room and district do as well. So I think we first need to recognize that for as long as this country has existed, legal immigration has been a vital part of the American experiment. That being said, we do need to do a better job at securing our border. One of our parties is fixated on a wall. I don't know if we all saw the 60 Minutes piece where people just walked around. I am entirely in favor of whatever the most appropriate technology is for whichever portion of it is in order to keep it secure. That being said, I'm also in favor of guest worker programs, expanded H-1Bs and other visas to make sure that after we educate people in this country, that we keep the best and brightest here so that we remain a center of innovation in the world. I will also point out to folks that there was a bipartisan supported bill that went through Congress this year that was endorsed by the National Border Patrol Council. This bill died because President Trump asked his party to kill it, in order to take a win away from President Biden. The problem with that was it also took a win away from everyone in this room and the American people.
I would like to make 3 points. The first point that I'd like to make is that those people who are at the southern border are fleeing poverty, they are fleeing violence, and they're fleeing tyranny. How ironic, because we have Victoria Spartz here who says that she thinks that we should vote for Donald Trump again, who is tyrannical, who is in favor of, who thinks of President Putin as his friend. The other point that I want to make is that Indiana is a state that relies heavily on undocumented workers, construction, hospitality, landscaping. Many different industries rely heavily on illegal immigrants coming to this state. We need to have a way to incorporate them into our state legally. We need a system that takes into account. We need to reform the immigration system.
Thank you, ma'am.
System.
That's time. Time, please.
More resources and streamlined. Thank you.
We have to move on to the closing statements. With the amount of interest, the microphone will start back at the... Did you have a chance to answer?
I think so.
Yeah, I thought so too. We'll start back at the beginning of the table here. You looked like you were ready to go right there. The closing statements, as you are reminded, 1 minute time. You may use all or some of your time. Your minute begins now.
Yeah, this is Raju. Raju is for you. Please visit my website, rajuforcongress.com. And also, I seek your full support. I have the experience that brings to the table from healthcare, business, and government, and foreign direct investment, jobs, 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 and economic development. Economy is the only way we can solve some of the problems. Inflation must go down. We must create more jobs in the 5th District, and that deregulate some of those regulations that is affecting small businesses. I'm all about the next generation. Stop stealing from next generations. We must leave something for next generations, for our grandchildren and great-grandchildren, instead of fighting and not making any solutions, common sense solutions, and real problems. I'm also advocating for veterans. Must build a rebuild Marion VA hospital that can provide state-of-the-art, state-of-the-equipment, first-class hospital for veterans. Thank you.
Please.
My name is Max Engling, and I want to be your representative, but I need your help. If you go to maxforindiana.com, you can find out how to get a sign, learn more information about me, or how to volunteer. Second thing, though, we need better than a government that is $35 trillion in debt. We need better than wide open southern borders that are flooding our country with illegal immigrants, crime, and drugs. And we need better than food and fuel and healthcare prices that are 20% higher than when Biden took over. That's why I'm committed to cut spending in Washington. I'm committed to drive down the cost of living. I'm committed to secure the border. I'm committed to honor God, to listen well, and to take action on behalf of the 5th Congressional District. My name is Max Engling, and I ask for your vote on May 7th.
Thank you again. My name is Chuck Goodrich, and I appreciate you being here. It's very humbling and honored for you to come here and listen to our ideas. And I can tell you, I started off with saying, we all have the opportunity to live in the greatest nation ever known to the human race. And pursue the American dream. And I can tell you, I'll work every day to protect the American dream. That includes border security. That includes generational poverty and how we deal with that and putting dignity back in work. That includes getting rid of this tremendous burdensome regulation that the Congress and Biden administration has placed on us and our personal liberty. And it includes building a budget that we can all live by. You live by a budget. I live by a budget. Gail Erlich lives by a budget. You can look at the finance of Indiana, and I was on the Ways and Means Committee, and we got a great budget in Indiana. We need to bring that to Washington, D.C., and that hard work, and I'll do that for you. Thank you for having me. Go with ChuckGoodrich.com if you want to know more. Get involved in my campaign.
My name's Mark Hurt. The whole reason I'm here is the common man. I'm thinking of that family, that man that raises his kids, that family that pays their taxes. They work real hard just to get by. There's too much movement towards special interests. The current system isn't working. It's you need a fighter. I would like to be the fighter for this district. And when I get out in D.C., fight against the unnecessary spending. I believe I'm the most experienced, the most prepared to be the best voice in Washington, D.C. for the 5th District. So I ask for your support if you want to be involved in the campaign. We got about 30 days to go before the Republican primary. Come down and see me. My website, markhurt.org. We have our reform ideas there. I thank the League of Women Voters for hosting this event and letting us debate the ideas.
Thank you. Every week, I meet with hundreds of Hoosiers like you that are so frustrated with Congress. I say, we don't have to put up with that anymore. That's right. We don't have to put up with a Congress that is not attending to our needs. We don't need to put up with an economy that makes it so hard to buy groceries every week. And we obviously don't need to put up with a border with millions of illegals crossing each year. Let me ask a quick question. Who out there would be thrilled if this is the last time someone like AOC, Nancy Pelosi, or let's say any of our existing Congress members could run for office. Say aye. That's why you need me in Congress to bring about congressional term limits, something over 80% of us agree on, because we're smart enough to know that nothing changes if nothing changes. Go to patrickmforcongress.com to learn more. Thank you so much, and have a wonderful night.
Hello, I'm Matt Pfeiffer. I do understand I'm the oddball here. Might be the Davy Crockett in the room, but I know I'm not at the top of the list, but I hope that something I said, if you're elected, instead of myself, you'll do something to fix. There's a lot of issues that I've tried to express tonight that can be looked at if you guys are elected instead of myself. And just for the record, I want to address something real quick. So during this polarized time in the climate, there's a lot of hate speech towards Mexicans. And is having a Mexican flag outside of a house of somebody who might have immigrated here legally from Mexico, who's proud of their heritage, really the biggest issue in America? And I hate slander, but I do feel like I need to address that comment just because, like I said, I have a lot of good friends in Mexico. So thank you.
I'd like to thank the League of Women Voters in Anderson High School for having us here tonight. Hopefully some of the things you've heard help to shine a light on the differences between the parties and the candidates here on stage. For me, I'm running because I want to ensure that our children grow up with as many freedoms as we did, not fewer. And right now, the way things are going, I'm not sure that's a given. I want to make sure that women are empowered to make their own healthcare choices, that seniors can retire and not have to work their entire lives, that our students get a high-quality public education that prepares them for the workforce of tomorrow, that people can afford to live in our district with the wages they earn from high-quality jobs right here in the 5th District. Friends, we've got to do something differently if we expect different outcomes. My name is Ryan Fenninger, and I'm a Democrat running to be your next congressman. I humbly ask for your vote in May and again in November. Please go to ryanforindiana.com to learn more about our campaign. Join us, and let's make the 5th District work for everyone.
Good evening again. I'm Deborah Pickett, and I'm running because I'm deeply concerned about the state of our country. I'm deeply worried about the state of our democracy. And I am deeply worried about the attacks on our personal rights. I can make a pledge to you that if you vote for me, that I will be working hard and vigorously to protect our democracy, that I will work vigorously to protect your rights to your personal decisions in your life that government does not belong in. I will also work for effective and efficient government for you. All I have to do is look, I ask you this question. Do you want any one of these Republicans in Congress right now? Right now we're seeing chaos under the Republican leadership. I want efficient, effective government. I want your Social Security payments to be delivered to you on time. I want to make sure that there's no gamesmanship when it comes to, excuse me, thank you.
Time, thank you.
Yeah, I'm L.D. Powell. Thank you to the League of Women Voters, those here tonight, those listening online. As I started to open up tonight, I mentioned that I believe the system is rigged. It's rigged in favor of career politicians and millionaires who can throw enormous amounts of money at buying the seats. So my challenge to you tonight is don't take the easy road. Good news too, I'm not going to be filling the airwaves with my name and negative ads. I will reach out to you via text message, emails, and my website and social media. That is the way we beat the system, as we go with the low cost way with and take big money out of the races. And so when I send you a text, do me a favor, open it, at least the first one. If I send you an email, at least open it, at least the first one, and maybe check out the website. That's the way we get the advantage back as the people, where we don't have the money or the resources or the political connections that some others have. I'm L.D. Powell. Remember, if you send me, I will fight for the
Thank
border
you,
and securing our future.
Thanks, Lonnie. Yeah, so I'm with Lonnie. I'm tired of these millionaires. You know, they want your vote but not your voice. I want your voice and I want your vote. I'm here to represent you. I'm here to fight for you. Listen, the establishment on the federal level is bad, but you think that's bad? You ought to look at this local stuff going on in Madison County. We are being oppressed. The Republican chair here is hand-picking candidates to go against good candidates. He needs to go, and I'm going to confront him after we get done here, but because I hate talking about a guy, but he talks about me in the newspaper. He talks about me behind my back, and I'm going to confront you after this is over with because you need to be confronted. The people of this county are tired of you. They're tired of the elected officials. People, wake up. You have got to wake up and get some of these people out of here because this man is ruining our county single-handedly. Look at who you're voting for. We got a bunch of good candidates, a new Republican Guards, what we're calling it, and we're here. We're gonna fight for you. We're fighting for the common people. And listen, I love you guys. You guys are us. Let's fight these guys.
I think my Democrat opponent forgot to mention that we actually have Democrats in charge of the Senate and White House. That was chaos and lawlessness, but Republicans were able to hold their ground. And we do need President Trump to win, but he needs people that can fight for him and willing to have a track record of challenging of establishment of both party because it became so corrupt and forgot about with the people. So I can tell you, look at our records, because one of my key opponents, Chuck, he supported bills to funnel money to China, to his own businesses and his friends. And I will tell you, I will hold the ground to deliver on border security. I will deliver on healthcare and debt, and we will defeat China, Russia, and Iran because it's a must. It's been my pleasure and honor, and thank you for having us.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for attending this forum. Thank you to Anderson High School for their help and hospitality for hosting tonight's event. The League of Women Voters has information available on how, where, and when to vote in the upcoming election, as well as other voting information in the lobby. They also have information on the League's Vote 411 website. A link of tonight's video, thanks to our friends at Fox 59 and CBS 4 for being here with video streaming. That link will also be on the Vote 411 website, as well as other posts within our radio group as well. If you don't mind, folks, for their passion, for their country to be willing to serve these candidates on stage right now, a huge round of applause. Thank you very much for attending, for viewing, and for listening, and good night from Anderson.
Anderson High School is where we are. If you just tuned in, the past 2 hours have been filled with candidates for the 5th Congressional District from both major parties. One thing that you have to say for them, they were able to articulate their ideas adequately, their policy. They were able to talk about their beliefs and how they feel that government should run. They were passionate about it, but they were professional and courteous. And so you have to hand that to them, to be able to have them all on stage and to be able to handle themselves the way that they did this evening. You were listening to what we call a quadcast on WMUN and WHBU, both our AM and FM frequencies, and also streaming live. Now, you can also hear replays of this, I think, probably coming up from WMUN.com and 1240WHBU.com, as well as I'm sure in the next few days you'll hear excerpts on Delaware County Today with your host, Steve Lindell, who was at the podium moderating this evening's forum. Steve Lindell, of course, does Delaware County Today Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 9 a.m., and you'll be able to hear portions of this, I'm sure, in the coming days. Once again, if you just joined us, you missed a great opportunity to hear the 5th District candidates articulating their ideas, but you'll be able to hear replays of that, I'm sure, in the upcoming days. We went just a little bit over what we planned on doing this evening, but that's going to put a wrap on it for now. For everyone involved here, Sean Mattingly has done a great job of helping us with sound here this evening, and of course, Steve Lindell on stage. I'm Brett Busby. I'd like to thank you for being with us this evening as we get ready to return you back to our regularly scheduled programming on WMUN and WHBU. From Anderson High School, back to our regular programming. Good night.
92.5 FM, 1340 AM, and on Alexa, say play WMUN, a Whoop Boom station. This is the new WMUN Muncie.